Well, Pete, it's that time again, and I think we need to have another go at doing one of these lockdown podcasts. What do you reckon?
Well, I think it would be rude not to.
Let's do it. So welcome, everybody. It's episode 7 of the Constant Geekery podcast. Whether you're watching on YouTube, that's youtube.com/Constant Geekery, or listening to your favorite podcasting platform, we're very pleased to have you with us. And this week, we're going to be talking about the new Apple Silicon. We've got the new M1 chips. We've got the M1 Max. Are you excited about all of this, Pete?
I am really excited about it, Dave. And I have to say, the thing I'm most excited about is the fact that we called it with the chip naming convention. It is indeed the M1, and we called that, and I've never been right about anything in my life, so I'm quite pleased about that.
In fairness, I think we said it might be an M14, so but we were half right. Let's just take the wins when you get them, Pete. That's the way forward.
Yeah, still never been right in my life, but almost right.
I just got to say again, I'm going to be, because it's evening time, I'm having my evening whiskey, and this week this could be a regular feature, I don't know. This week I'm going with a bit of American bourbon, and I've chosen Tin Cup. And I really like Tin Cup whiskey because you get a tin cup every time you get a bottle. So I've got quite a collection of these tin cups, but they don't hold enough for my taste. So
you could use it for tiddlywinks, but I do feel that this is going to become a feature, and I don't have a drink again, which is probably a mistake when you're doing a podcast, but maybe I don't drink alcohol, so maybe anything with sugar in it, so maybe some suggestions from those listening in on what they'd like to see me drinking, we can start some kind of little tradition, shall we say.
Liquidized potatoes with added swarf. Actually, Pete, I've got to tell you a story. I went to visit some clients once, and they're of a particular sort of eco persuasion. That sounds really bad. I don't mean anything bad by that at all. But they like their health foods. They were the kind of people, in fact, I'm pretty sure on the same visit they lectured me about not drinking McDonald's milkshake because it's got sawdust in it to thicken it, apparently. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
And then she proceeded to give me this smoothie that they'd made, and it was green and gritty and possibly one of the most disgusting things I've ever had in my mouth. Ever. And I think at this point we should probably move on.
I think we should, yeah. So what are we talking about again?
Apple silicon.
Apple silicon.
Smoothies with swarf and apple silicon. So the M1 chip, let's talk about that first. So we got an 8-core CPU and an 8-core GPU. Of course, we didn't know what we were going to get beforehand. So are we pleased with that outcome?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We did muse how different it would be from the A14 Bionic. So we're seeing two additional high-performance CPU cores as a result and four additional GPU cores. So we were excited about how the A14 Bionic was benchmarking, and that got us excited about what Apple Silicon could bring. And that's just really been confirmed by the addition of these extra cores and particularly the GPU cores.
Yeah, I find that quite exciting. I just want to step back a moment, though. Obviously, because this is ARM architecture, those 8 cores break down into 4 high-efficiency cores. So these are cores that are used for low-power background tasks that help keep the battery life strong. I think they use about 1/10 of the power of the high-performance cores. And yep. Then the high-performance cores, obviously, are handling the heavyweight stuff. Now, in the A14 Bionic, you've got 4 of those efficiency cores and 2 of the high-performance cores. So the 2 additional cores that we're getting are high-performance CPU cores, and that's a really key point, which will help explain the benchmarks that we'll come on to. Okay. But the GPU cores, we were pretty astonished with the A14 Bionic's GPU performance. It was benching at about half the level of the 5300M that's in the 16-inch MacBook Pro. So if we've now doubled the GPU core count, does that mean that this GPU will be on par with the 5300M?
Well, I think it's reasonable to assume it is going to be, which is astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, there could be some overhead issues, but it's going to be close, isn't it? It's going to be in that ballpark, and we weren't really expecting it to get quite that high. So I think, yeah, astonishing, really good.
Yeah, very exciting. Beyond what we expected, really.
It is.
And our expectations were high.
Yes, they were. They were. I think that's, you know, we are talking about machines that don't have dedicated GPUs. So to have the performance of something that does have a dedicated GPU, albeit a mobile GPU, I think that is very impressive. Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we go through. The other thing that's on this chip, of course, we've got that 16-core neural engine, and that just simply means that we're bringing machine learning to the Mac. So there's APIs that developers can take advantage of to access machine learning ability. I think that'll be good news for people, you know, scientists who work in particular fields, but also for everyday users, you know, that just they're using it, for instance, to clean up the image on the webcam, which remains resolutely a 720p webcam, of course.
Yeah, it does. But significantly, that is becoming in 2020, where so many more of us have been forced to work from home, whether we want to or not. Having a decent quality webcam that works, particularly in lower light conditions, without having to shine, you know, multiple super trooper lights on your face, that's going to be good. It's going to improve communication and collaboration. So, and of course, people will use it for communicating with family and things as well. So it's not just professional. So that's really the slim, shallow end of the pool for machine learning, but a welcome one for consumers, I'd say.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what it gets used for. I saw a demo a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week. I'm losing track of time, but it was Adobe. And I assume it was After Effects they were using, but there was a drone shot. If you can imagine this, a drone shot going along a beach, and there was a rider on a horse on the beach, and they used an AI tool to erase the horse and its rider.
And yeah, that was last week.
It looked good. You know, that's the
stunning.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing where AI comes in, and you're seeing it now in a lot of photo editing programs as well, you know, Sky Replacement and various other other exciting things.
And just touching on something we mentioned, I think, in our last podcast about removing, or actually it might have been the podcast before, about removing creativity. We talked about how with new iPhones, it was kind of taking away from the creatives. I would say this is where actually being able to remove something like that is a good shortcut to workflow, and it doesn't stifle creativity. It actually aids it, because you're not doing something laborious and mundane that anyone who's learned how to use, say, Photoshop will get to know how to do to a greater or lesser skill level. This enables you to focus on the end result. So I would say this is where AI actually aids creativity.
Yeah, I think so too. And I look forward to seeing that. Obviously, I suspect it would have had a much harder job if the backdrop was, you know, a load of trees and bushes or something it was trying to replace. But still, it's good to see stuff going that way. And, you know, it'll be interesting. And I've seen this in the comments, actually. It'll be interesting to see how the M1 chip compares to, say, something like, you know, NVIDIA's compute cards and is it Tesla? They call it their desk-side supercomputer system. Anyway, be interesting to see. Let's move on anyway. What about the RAM? How do you feel about that, Pete?
Well, it's on chip, isn't it? So that means it's shared between the CPU and the GPU. So a little bit different maybe from how we've become used to those things being done in the past. Interestingly, though, only 8 gig and 16 gig options on the first machines to be released. So I think it's going to be very fast because it's on chip. But a few eyebrows raised by many, including in some of the comments on some of the other Constant Geekery videos you've put out in the last week or so, about is that a bit low, particularly for some of the tasks that we saw demonstrated. But I think you touched on the fact that we probably need to rethink this a little bit more. I think we're going to talk about that a bit later. So it'll be interesting to see that. But certainly what we saw from the event is some very impressive things being done with less memory than we've been used to in the past.
Yeah, I do feel that we've got to get out of this mindset of, you know, fast x86 processor plus system RAM plus GPU with, you know, dedicated video RAM. This is a different system. It's a system on chip. It's unified memory. Simple truth is that, you know, in a system, a traditional PC system, you're not using all of the system RAM and all of the video RAM at the same time, usually. So we don't need as much in total, in all likelihood. The other thing is as well that it's likely to be very quick because it's on chip. So I think I would like to reserve judgment until we've actually got the machines in to test them. But my suspicion is that it won't be the same as what we're traditionally used to.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, isn't it? That we really need to hold judgment on any of this until we've seen how this... It's a whole new system. It's a whole new architecture. We've been so ingrained with x86 for, well, as long as I can remember, almost, you know, apart from the very early dates, that's what's seared into our brains. But this is a different approach. It's really exciting. It is a bit of a leap forward. It's almost, you know, we keep using car analogies, but you know, it was always bigger engines, more cubic capacity. That was the secret. And now suddenly what you're finding is it's going the other way. Even high performance models with smaller engines and other ways of making or giving the performance, even down to some tiny, tiny engines. It's a mindset change. And I think we need to see how that pans out once we get our hands on some gear and have a play with it.
Okay, so let's talk about the gear. So we'll just quickly run through the three machines. So we've got the MacBook Air. Now, we were expecting Apple to introduce a fanless model. I don't think this came as any great surprise to anybody at all, but what I find interesting about the MacBook Air, Pete, is when you look at the entry level model, so this is the $1,000 version, it's got a 7-core GPU. And I've been, you know, I'm sort of thinking about this and wondering why they've done that. I assume it's because of the way they've been in the chips. So you know, when foundries make silicon wafers, you know, with loads of processors on, it's not an exact science. It doesn't always work, you know. So what happens is the manufacturers will bin, or they'll switch off certain cores. So for example, they might aim to make an 8-core CPU. For example, Intel might make an 8-core CPU. They find that, you know, one of the cores doesn't work, so they block off two of them and sell it as a 6-core. It's that kind of, I'm simplifying it, but that's the idea.
Yeah.
So the question is, you know, is this just Apple being really efficient and making use of the, you know, their entire production yield? Is it the case that their yield is, you know, perhaps they're actually trying to go for more than 8 cores and they're blocking off those other cores? You know, is there something held in reserve, or is this a deliberate measure to keep the pricing in check across the range of models? You know, switch off a core, give them slightly less at the entry level point, just to give people a reason to upgrade, and, you know, a reason to still go and buy the MacBook Pro. Any thoughts?
It's almost alien to me that Apple would do something like that to encourage you to go up to the next level of machine. That was good timing.
Don't make me spit out my whiskey.
Don't waste it. Apple have always been very, very canny or very, very strategic with their pricing. They know how to price to encourage people to upgrade. So I think you're probably onto something here. You're right, the yields are probably a reflection on this, but it may even be, like you say, that there's more than an 8-core out there. It's just that it's not in these models because they want to keep something back for when they start introducing the more prosumer models that we're anticipating to come next.
Yeah. So pricing wise, it's $999 for the 7-core version. And that has 8 gigs of RAM and 256 on the SSD. Or for an extra $250, you get an 8-core version with a 512 gig SSD. What's important to know about the MacBook Air is that they are replacing the Intel MacBook Air. So you can't get the Intel MacBook Air anymore. Not from Apple anyway. Of course, That means great time to go and try and find one of those. If you're particularly after an Intel MacBook Air, there should be some deals around. So that's the MacBook Air. No great surprises there. And then we've got the MacBook Pro 13-inch.
Yep.
So the main difference, of course, is
active cooling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what this says to me is if Apple are shouting about the cooling, and they did do that in the event, you know, this is going to, you know, sustain performance, et cetera, then what does that tell you about the MacBook Air?
That it could do more if it had active cooling.
Yeah, I think so. But how much difference that actually makes in the real world, we'll have to wait and see. So specifically, though, Apple are replacing the 2-port version of the 13-inch MacBook Pro.
They are, but the 4-port one, the 4-port Intel version, is still available.
Yes, it is. And there's always been two different versions of these laptops. And I did cover this in the other video, so we won't go into detail again, but the 4-port version is different internally. So you know, it's the entry-level MacBook Pro that they're replacing. And it starts at $1,300.
Yeah.
So the next computer is the Mac Mini. Now, we weren't specifically expecting this. This was quite a nice surprise, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we mooted maybe there being a new smaller form desktop that had the chassis, a smaller version of the Mac Pro chassis, didn't we? But we weren't expecting a Mac Mini, which is something different. So that is nice. It's got active cooling again. So did they make mention of how many fans that's got? Is it still just the one, same as in the MacBook Pro?
It's one fan, yeah. It's larger than the one that's in the MacBook Pro, but whether it moves more air or not is another question. I think it's important to say the Mac Mini has always been mobile components. So whilst it is sold as a desktop machine, it's mobile processors and, you know, effectively laptop equipment.
Got you. Okay. I didn't know that. Makes sense, though.
Now I've said it, I'm doubting myself and thinking maybe it isn't. So no doubt someone will correct me in the comments if if I've got that wrong. But I thought that was the case. And again, with the Mac Mini, there was always quite a range of pricing, wasn't there? You started off with that i3, and you could go all the way up to the 6-core i7. So
yeah,
Apple are replacing the entry level Mac Minis, but not the top end Intel Mac Mini. You can still buy that.
That's the 6-core one, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think it's a standard. It's a 6-core i5. I think you can spec a 6-core i7. Something else that's important to know as well is that the Intel Mac Mini is space gray and the M1 Mac Mini is silver, and there's no color choice.
Ah, okay.
And that is incredibly important because obviously space gray is faster, isn't it? It's a faster color.
Space gray is definitely faster, yeah. Yeah, but not as fast as, say, gold.
Yes. So what else doesn't it have? The new Mac Mini doesn't have
10 gigabit Ethernet.
Yeah, and I think this will matter to some people, but I think the people that it matters to could still buy the Intel Mac Mini. You could also do it via Thunderbolt as well. You know, you could... I mean, this is Apple, you know, it's the dongle life, isn't it? Let's buy another dongle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's environmentally friendly to do that.
It is. What about the price?
Well, $700, which is the cheapest way to access the new Apple Silicon at the moment. Well, outside of getting an iPad. I must admit, I've always been a little bit confused by the Mac Mini. Simply because the iMacs always seemed more attractive because of the screen and the fact you get a magic mouse and keyboard. But for $700, you're getting into Apple Silicon now. If you've got a screen, a mouse and a keyboard, or you're prepared to stump up for one of those, it's a great way to access those things.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, look at my situation here. I'm sat in front of a very nice 4K display. I don't need to have an iMac, so I've got my keyboard and trackpad. I would just buy the Mac Mini. In fact, that's exactly what I have done. So just to be clear, for the purposes of testing on the channel, we've got a Mac Mini coming with 16 gigs. So our expectation is that because they're basically all three the same machine. And our expectation is that the Mac Mini is probably the quickest of them because it will sustain the, you know.
Well, the cooling's going to be optimized in that chassis, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd have thought there's probably not much in it at all between that and the MacBook Pro. The difference is the MacBook Pro has a battery. If you're charging the battery, that adds heat. So the Mac Mini doesn't have that issue. I'm just speculating here.
Yeah, good point.
It's more useful to me. I'm perfectly happy with my Intel 4-port MacBook Pro 13-inch for now. So for me, the Mac Mini makes a lot of sense. But we also then decided to get a MacBook Air as well, and we've got the entry-level model with the 8 gigs of RAM and that 7-core GPU, because that's going to be interesting to test. So we've essentially got fastest possible versus, you know, the strongest versus the weakest.
Yeah.
That should help us to really get a good range and a good idea of the performance of these various models, I think. However, I'm just going to go and say it. I don't think for everyday usage and for most consumers, I don't think you'd really notice much difference between any of the models. That's my prediction. For a consumer, just doing general purpose computing, I think you'll only start to see those differences when you really push the machines. So we'll see if I'm right.
Yeah, so I suppose our comment at the moment, if you're wondering which one to buy, is buy the form factor that suits you most rather than worrying about which one's going to be the quickest, because probably if you're looking at one of these, it won't make that much difference to you.
Mm. Yeah, completely agree with that. Obviously, we didn't mention battery life. Strongest battery life is in the MacBook Pro, but that's not to say the MacBook Air is weak in any way at all. We'll come on to that in a minute. First of all, though, let's talk about the bad. Let's do the good and the bad, and we'll start with the bad, Pete.
Yeah, it's the bad and the ugly, as far as I'm concerned. It's the lack of I/O on these machines. Of course, that's been an issue we've raised with the 2-port Intel machines. You've only got two Thunderbird.
That's something completely different.
Yeah, standby for action. That's different again. That's Stingray. Thunderbolt 3 ports or USB 4 ports, which of course means if you want more connectivity, you go for the ugly, which is dongle heaven, which we don't like. We do not like that. And on top of that, these machines can only support one display via these ports. So up to a 6K, 60 FPS or 60 Hertz, which is a Pro XDR level screen. Of course, the Mac Mini can drive a 4K, 60 Hertz screen via the HDMI, which is hardly surprising because the laptops already have a screen. So essentially each device can support two screens, but that's it.
Yeah, and this is going to be a problem for some users, but I think possibly not in the target demographic, but we'll get to that in a moment. But I've certainly been chatting with folks on the YouTube channel on one guy's got two of the LG 5K ultrafines. Another one had two of the 4K ultrafines. So these are the monitors that Apple produced in conjunction with LG, and they're Thunderbolt driven. And of course, normally you can daisy chain them, but our expectation is, of course, that isn't going to work at all. And I think this must be down to limited PCI Express lanes with the system on chip. So I suspect this is something that will get fixed, but at the moment you're limited on the number of displays. And there's, well, almost certain there's no eGPU support. That's what I'm being told. Anyway.
Are you going to try it anyway?
Of course I'm going to try it anyway. I don't expect it's going to work.
No. I don't think it will work. And what do you think for future models as well?
Well, it's entirely possible that it might happen for a future model, but my breath is not bated. So
no, I think you might be disappointed, because I think Apple are distancing them. I can't get my words out now. Moving away from eGPU very, very rapidly. So I hope to be proved wrong, because I know your forays into eGPU have been quite interesting, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm not massively bothered about it because I'm secretly thinking that I may yet still move over to a PC, possibly even with Linux, for my video editing rig. And I could still use the eGPU in that capacity. So I'm not really worried about it.
Possibly that means you will, knowing you.
Well, this all comes down to, you know, I quite like to have some of the new AMD silicon. You know, I'd like to have a play with that. But they seem to have failed even more than NVIDIA did with their launch. Instead of just having people buying these things and sculpting them on eBay, you've actually got retailers themselves price sculpting the new AMD chips, even on pre-orders. Oh. It's absolutely crazy.
Let's save that one for another podcast. What else don't we like about this?
Well, I don't know about me. It's not something I particularly dislike, but certainly I know a lot of people are upset about upgradability. So, for example, the RAM obviously is on chip. You can't change that. The SSD is soldered on. But what I will say is that any different to the machines that these are replacing? The MacBook Air?
No.
Soldered on RAM, soldered on SSD. MacBook Pro? Soldered on RAM, soldered on SSD. And so it goes on. The Mac Mini is exactly the same.
It's no different. And, you know, it, as you say, it probably doesn't matter for the vast majority of this target market, which is, you know, consumers, general purpose computing users who probably never even consider that. They buy a machine and they use it, and they don't care about that. Mm. And I think this just goes back to that mentality that we've had drummed into us over a long time of upgrade, upgrade, put more stuff in, more numbers, bigger numbers, go on, go on, and go on.
Yeah. We got to get ourselves out of that mindset, I suppose. These are not, you know, desktop machines designed to be modular, designed to be upgradable. Apple does provide one of those. It's not very cheap. Actually, I've got something nagging in my brain. I think the Mac Mini might have been able to upgrade the RAM in the Mac Mini. I lose track. I haven't had one of the latest generation. Never mind, no. Though. Next question, though, is also to do with RAM. Lots of people saying, why can you only have 8 gigs or 16 gigs of RAM?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. It's on-chip RAM, so it's very expensive, relatively speaking, compared to discrete RAM that we've been used to. And as we've touched on already, we need to start thinking about RAM differently. So 16 gig may be more than enough. It may be the equivalent of 32 gig on a traditional Intel-based architecture. We won't know until we get our hands on the goodies, but that's our expectation based on the example applications that we saw running in the Apple event.
Yeah. So, like you say, I think we just got to wait and see, change our mindset potentially. But I'd also say as well that this is no different to the current situation, is it? Particularly with the notebooks anyway. I'm pretty sure they're only available with 8 or 16. And, you know, you go out and buy a gaming machine, you know, a gaming PC. Most of those, you don't really need more than 16 gigs of RAM in a gaming PC. Unless you're editing, you know, 6K video, or doing a lot of layers, you know, you probably don't really need more than 16 gigs for that either. So I'm sure lots of people will have different opinions on that and would argue different scenarios, but it's a difficult thing to assess because everybody's workflow is different, you know, and how you use the machine is different. So it's very difficult to say. I don't think it's an issue personally for the type of users that are going to be buying these machines.
Yeah.
Let's talk about pricing. We also included this in the bad section.
Yeah. So it gets expensive fast with upgrades. But that again is not uncommon for Apple products. So the trend continues.
I think, it's $200 for everything you do, it seems. I don't know if you remember this, Pete. When they updated the 13-inch MacBook Pro earlier this year, it's obviously an 8-gig model, and you could upgrade to 16 gigs for $100. I remember making a video about it, and then Apple quietly pulled that and changed it back to $200. So there's a specific reason why they price things the way they do, and it does get eye-wateringly expensive. So, I'm disappointed that it's only the Mac Mini that reduces the entry price. I've got a feeling, and I hope, again, I'm not wrong on this, that it's $100 cheaper than the previous entry-level Intel Mac Mini.
Yeah, be careful what you say, because they might then hoik the price on that as well. Probably.
But it ceases to become a cheap machine when you factor in the cost of a decent display, a decent keyboard. You know, well, you want the Mac keyboard and mouse, don't you? So.
It's what's always held us back from buying them for the studio, isn't it? Because every time we've looked at a Mac Mini, on the surface of it, you look at it and you go, oh, that's pretty good value for money. But you then have to think, well, yeah, you do want an Apple keyboard and mouse, really, if you want to give your the people who are using it the right tools for the job, and then you want a nice display. And then you're suddenly thinking, well, why wouldn't I just get an iMac? So that's why I've always found the Mac Mini a bit confusing. But a reduction of $100 on the price makes it more interesting, particularly as it's Apple Silicon.
Yeah. So a nice way to get into it, if you've already got that kit to test it. What about the good stuff?
Oh, well, lots here.
Can I talk about the benchmarks?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we've seen some leaked benchmarks, and I know that you are the bench king,
well,
at least when it comes to benchmarks. So,
I'm going to put some caveats on
this. The beans.
I don't want to get too excited until I've been able to test one. I don't know what exact system these are. I don't know how people are testing these or who is testing them, because they haven't been shipped yet, even to reviewers, I don't believe. So I do believe the benchmarks, and we're talking in Geekbench 5 of single core performance measured at over 1600. So that's faster than the A14 Bionic. That is on pretty much level pegging with the brand new AMD chips, the Ryzen 5000 series. It's the multi-core performance, so that's particularly interesting. And if you remember, the A14 Bionic, on which the M1 chip is based, it's not completely the same, but it's based on that. Benches at about 4,000 in Geekbench 5 for multi-core. Adding these two high-performance cores pushes it up over 7,000. So it's a big difference. It's knocking on the door of the multi-core performance in my 12-core 2013 Mac Pro. It's outperforming the i9s in the 16-inch MacBook Pro. I'm quite excited at that possibility, and I'm pretty sure that was a MacBook Air. Although I have to say, Geekbench doesn't in any way stress the thermals of the CPU. The test isn't long enough to really push it. So I think when we get these machines, we'll do some longer testing to really assess it. But for your average computer user, the kind of person that would go out and buy a $1,000 MacBook Air, I think they're going to be pretty chipper about that performance, wouldn't you say?
It's absolutely breathtaking. Let's not take anything away from those leaked benchmarks. If it's anywhere near that, it is going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any benchmarks for GPU. That doesn't mean they don't exist. I've just been deliberately not trying to look, and I stumbled upon the other benchmarks. The GPU performance, of course, we've already spoken about this. We expect that to be way beyond where we thought it would be. Certainly getting up to the levels that you see in the 16-inch MacBook Pro, certainly knocking on the door of it anyway. What other good things have we got?
Battery life.
Right.
This is a big thing. Just incredible on both the notebooks. I think it's like, is it 15 hours wireless web and 11 hours of video streaming on the MacBook Air,
something like that.
Even more for the MacBook Pro. And I can't remember if it was a comment in one of the other Constant Geekery videos or something else I read, where we're going to start considering our notebooks like we do our phones. So we just use them all day long, and we just put them on charge at night. You know, it's never a case of, oh, you know, like my Mac is plugged in now, and that's normally how I operate and make sure I'm near a charger, even though it's got great battery life, this Intel MacBook Pro 16. I think it's going to change our relationship with chargers.
As long as we stop using Microsoft Teams and Google Chrome.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, maybe those developers have looked at the Apple Silicon and been inspired by its efficient approach to things and decided to write their code in a more efficient way.
It would be nice to be able to get through a two-hour Microsoft Teams meeting, you know, without having to plug
in. Without plugging in.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, well, that's another story for another day. If you were to take an equivalent PC laptop to the MacBook Air or the MacBook Pro 13-inch at the same price point or similar price point with the same level of build quality, you know, we're talking a unibody chassis, you know, good build quality premium notebook. I'm struggling to think of many PC laptops that would compete. There are a few, you know, the Dell XPS, they're really good. But are they going to get anywhere close to the performance of these new Apple Silicon notebooks? I can't see that they are. I think unless you've got discrete graphics in your notebook, the Apple Silicon's probably got it beat.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you have got discrete graphics, you're probably paying more or compromising on chassis quality at this price point. It's not to say you can't go out and get something with discrete graphics and an amazing chassis, like you say, that the higher end XPSs or the HP Spectres. But yeah, it really does make this a very attractive proposition, and great timing releasing these just before Christmas. It may make people who've perhaps had PC laptops till now reconsider their choices at this point. Very exciting times if you're about to take the plunge or thinking about it into Apple.
Well, Tim Cook said that the people buying Mac, 50% of them are new to Mac, and the MacBook Air is their best-selling platform. So this is not going to change that in a bad way. You know, it's going to bring more people to the platform.
It's going to accelerate it. It's going to accelerate it.
And I think after you.
I was just, we talked about Tim Cook and, you know, we always get some exciting figures. I was surprised to see that there was no statement that, you know, their range of laptops at the moment have not solved world peace or anything like that at the moment, because normally we have some kind of highfalutin statement like that. But maybe they're working on it.
They did a pretty good job of typecasting and generalizing what sort of person uses a Mac. I certainly didn't identify with the type of individuals that they were displaying using them, but there we go. I think and that's the great thing, that Apple is open to everybody and lots of people use it in lots of different ways.
Yeah, definitely.
For the average person, the average consumer on the street wanting to buy an Ultrabook, you know, $1,000, £1,000, is there a better laptop to buy? You know, you're going to be delighted, aren't you? If all of these performance things are to be believed, as long as you can run the software that you want to run, and that's that's another discussion for another day. I think people are going to be very, very happy with these new Macs.
Yeah, and I've got a little experiment that I'm going to be doing to test that out, which I'll explain more about in a future podcast. But to basically really see how someone who's not a geek like you or I, or many of us listening to this, how they feel about one of these new Apple Silicon laptops. So I'll report back on that.
Intriguing. Look forward to that. So on our next point, I'm sort of trying to gauge the mood of the comments, you know, from other videos I've posted on the YouTube channel. And again, that's youtube.com/constantgeekery. If you've not already had a look at the channel, check us out there. There's more video content about Apple Silicon. And people are asking, you know, why didn't Apple make new chassis, you know, for these Macs? Why didn't they add more ports? Why didn't they give it upgradability? You know, why is Apple... In fact, one commenter I saw today said, you know, Apple is trying to sell a lemon. And I totally get where he's coming from. I do understand where he's coming from, because he doesn't fit into the target demographic for these particular machines. So they don't appeal to him. But I think to call them lemons is not fair. So why is it that Apple have done this anyway? What do you think?
Well, and to be fair, I think we can relate. If we weren't doing what we are doing with Constant Geekery, with this podcast, with this channel, we probably wouldn't be buying a Mac Mini and a MacBook Air.
No.
So, but to call them lemons is a bit unfair. I was anticipating that we might have some new or tweaked chassis designs for sure, just to make them stand out. But actually, when you think about Apple and the way they do things, it makes complete sense, because they still have a lineup of Intel Macs that they've got to support and they need to keep selling. If they suddenly bring out something that is upgradable, has more ports, has perhaps a killer new look that people go, oh, that's gorgeous, I've got to have the latest, no one is going to buy those Intel Macs, and that kills half their product line. Why would Apple do that? You know, everyone will say, well, they want to make money. It's like, well, yeah, they're a business and they're very good at making money, and they're not going to sacrifice that at any stage. So that's why they've done it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. There's a slight something else as well that I think is this factoring in on this, and that is that, you know, because people would come back and say, well, why don't, if Apple did that, they'd just sell more Apple Silicon Macs in to make up for the Intel Macs that they're not selling. But they've got users who are stuck on Intel because there's still software shortages. There are certain things that aren't going to work yet on Apple Silicon. There's a certain group of users that are not going to be moving to Apple Silicon anytime soon. Lots of people have spent vast sums of money on new Intel Macs, and Apple said they would support them, and they need to be seen to do that. If you're an Intel user who's bought an Intel Mac recently and suddenly you see Apple wipe out their entire lineup of Intel Macs, what's that going to do for you? Is that going to give you confidence in the brand, or are you going to look to jump ship?
Well, it could cause a lot of bad feeling. Apple know what they're doing. They know who their target audiences are for each machine. They're not going to just alienate a load of their customers by going too hard, too quick. This is very considered, and what we're seeing here is actually a masterstroke of marketing.
Yeah.
And product management.
Well, it is. So they're going with a staged release. That's the way I'm looking at it, and which makes way more sense. You know, they need to stick with... excuse me. And they need to stick with known quantities. So,
yeah.
You know, when you launch a new product, you've got this plethora of things that can go wrong. You know, they've got potential issues with the hardware, potential issues with the software. If you can eliminate the chassis from that, you know, we're not going to have problems with the keyboard because we're using the new Magic Keyboard. We've sorted those things out. We know the touch bar works. We know the screen works. We know the chassis works. We know the batteries work. You're just taking out a whole load of unknowns and making your job a whole bunch easier. So I think that's part of the reason for sticking with the look. And I think Apple needs to hold something back. When you think about it, if you recall, Pete, we did a video some months ago where we tried to break Apple users down into categories. And I think we came up with three different categories, didn't we, in the end? So, you know, this is the consumer, the general purpose computing user, someone who is consuming some content, they're using Office apps, they're browsing the internet. Well, these machines have got spades of performance for that kind of user. They're never going to come close to you using the all of the performance of the machine. So it's perfectly adequate for them. But next, you've got your enthusiasts, your prosumers, some sorts of professionals, you know, your wedding photographers, your web developers, the kind of people that are professionals but need a little bit more horsepower, a little bit more functionality from their computer, but they don't need, you know, a 28-core Mac Pro, for example.
No.
And I suspect Apple will go for those users next. And then right at the end, they'll tackle those top-end users, you know, that really need massive computing power. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. It fits. As you said, we've kind of got this idea that Apple broadly segment their customer base into those three targets, and this is for that first customer base, that consumer casual user, but who wants the premium laptop feel. They want to have an Apple device, but they don't need a Mac Pro. They don't even need a MacBook Pro, because let's be honest, the entry level MacBook Pro is just, it's a MacBook Pro in name only, notwithstanding the performance of the new Apple Silicon. But you know, this audience, most of them don't need more than two displays.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't use. In fact, I've actually gone back to predominantly just using one display these days, and I would consider myself to be a pro user. So, you know, the laptops that these have replaced only had two ports anyway.
Yeah, that's it.
So
they've not changed anything, have they?
No, except on the Mac Mini, of course, which does lose two. But you can still buy an Intel one if you're desperate for more and you need that. So they've been very careful not to alienate anyone with that. And who knows how long ago it was they made the decision to have the two ports. Knowing that Apple Silicon was coming, did they make that decision quite a while back when it was still Intel? We had no sniff of Apple Silicon. It's all strategic. Nothing's done by accident.
Yeah, and don't forget that 12-inch MacBook that they brought out, and that only had one port on it, which was, it wasn't even Thunderbolt, was it? It was just USB-C. So this is not unprecedented for Apple. I think something that's quite telling is that because Apple haven't replaced the four-port MacBook Pro 13-inch, and they haven't replaced the top Intel Mac Mini. And what I would say is that indicates that Apple has something else in store to replace those machines. That seems reasonable to me. Yeah, so
absolutely,
they'll bring out something better for that particular demographic sometime next year. But it doesn't just make perfect sense to start with the least demanding demographic, which is your general consumers. And, you know, Apple are well known for using their consumers as beta testers as well. You know, so
they are.
They'll work out.
They are.
All of these people are going to work out all the kinks for you pro users out there. And you should be very grateful for that, I think.
Apple being considerate of that. But, you know, we joke about it, but think about it for a minute. If you take your average MacBook Air user or even your MacBook Pro 13 with the two ports, you look at all the apps that they've developed that will be available in Big Sur, all the Apple apps and the big ones from Adobe and Microsoft. How many people using those devices are ever going to have more than that on there? Very, very, very few, I would wager. I would imagine most of them will be using those apps and that's it. So if you were suddenly to foist Apple Silicon as the only option on pro users with all the, you know, workflows they depend on, you're in for a massive headache. Whereas this gives Apple a chance to just test the waters with, as you say, the least demanding segment of their audience. So, yeah, we should be grateful as more pro-focused users that we haven't had that dropped on us yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, the performance that we're getting in these machines, I'd say, is unprecedented at these price points and indicative that what comes next is going to be even better still. So if I'm a pro user, I understand people who get frustrated because, like us, you know, the announcement comes, you get excited, and then the products get launched. And, I'll be honest, when I watched the event, I was a little bit, oh, really? Because we want more. But we just need to be patient because that will come. And when it does come, it's going to be even better than what we've got now. And I think what's coming, I mean, yes, we still need to test it. We still need to do our tests. But indications are that what we've got coming is already amazing. So to get something better than that next year, perhaps in the spring, well, I'd say, you know, sit tight and look forward to it. I would say next year we should see the prosumer and enthusiast grade machines. Possibly get that new iMac at some point.
I really hope so.
And what do we expect from the next iteration of the chip, whether that's a stepped upgrade like an M1X or something, or whether we see an M2 or something? What do we expect to see from these new machines?
Well, obviously more performance would be the first thing we expect to see. So as we sort of wondered, are Apple holding stuff back? Will there be more cores? Will we just see more blistering performance? I expect so. I think it's fair to say that they'll address the port issues, the IO port issues, have more ports, and I expect we'll see more RAM, or at least as an optional upgrade.
Mm. Well, look forward to all of that. I think in conclusion, we're quite gratified that, you know, we've used Logic rather than listen to all of the rumors that are going around and regurgitate content and do all of that. We've just tried to look at things logically from a business perspective. You know, what is Apple likely to do? What makes sense? And turns out that, you know, Apple have basically done exactly what we predicted they would do. So if you like your tech channels accurate and on point, then Constant Geekery's got you covered. So hopefully you enjoy the podcast on whichever platform you're listening to it on. Again, just mention the YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/Constant Geekery. There's all sorts of content on there, lots of Apple Silicon. There is other content as well, although I have to say that the audience seems to get a bit upset. I posted a very short video today about the new Nintendo Game & Watch, you know, the 35th anniversary version. And I think it's fair to say my audience did not appreciate that. I actually lost 14 subscribers in the first 5 minutes. It's just...
Wow.
I don't understand that. Don't understand that. Anyway, don't worry, people. You know, just because I decide to feature something else on the channel doesn't mean that there's no more Apple Silicon coming. There'll be plenty to come. Got two machines coming in. We're going to do various testing with them. Obviously, we'll do the obvious benchmarks and other things. If there's something you want to see, let us know in the comments section. We'll try and cover that off. We have access to a good deal of software. Maybe that we need some of you guys out there to help us out. Send us some files for testing or whatever it is you want to do. I'm sort of thinking making quite a few shorter videos where we just run a few sort of tests. And we've got a web studio with lots of different Apple Macs to choose from, so we can probably do a representative test for most different machines as well. So again, if there's something you'd like to see, just let us know. We'll try and accommodate it as much as possible.
Definitely.
I think that's it, really. I'm guessing that next week, Pete, we'll probably be continuing to talk about Apple Silicon, maybe have a look at the software side of things, unless, of course, the machines have arrived, in which case we might be, you know, drooling over those instead.
Yeah, quite possibly, quite possibly.
And of course, the biggest question of all is, which whiskey will I be drinking next week? Well, tune into the Constant Geekery podcast to find out.
And what should I be drinking? Let us know.
I'm still going to... A smoothie. Some disgusting smoothie. Come on, someone send us a recipe. Pete has to make it and drink it on the podcast. How about that? Let's do it.
Excellent.
Thanks so much for listening or watching, whichever you've done. And we'll catch you next time on the Constant Geekery podcast.
Cheerio.
Excellent. Good. We're finished. I'll finish my whiskey.